following program is paid for by Little John Financial Services. The opinions and views expressed may not reflect those of Brook Communications, its affiliates, or its employees.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4. Every weekday, News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN brings you local information at 4 o'clock. Now presented by Little John Financial Services. It's David Little John with True Wealth on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
Hey, gang, welcome to the True Wealth Radio Show. As you can probably tell, this is not David Littlejohn. This is Justin Bruggeman, and I'm joined in studio with
Emma Arndt.
So, Emma, we're going to talk, well, I guess we're going to backtrack a little bit. A couple important things coming up. Tax deadline is next Wednesday.
Yep.
Yes, next Wednesday, the 15th. So if you haven't filed your taxes, you should probably hurry up and do so. And if you're like me, I still need to get it done as well. But also some with that deadline approaching, last kind of time you have to make Roth IRA and traditional IRA contributions for the 2025 tax year, assuming that you are eligible. So just know that that kind of time frame is coming to an end here in the next week.
We are 8 days away.
I know, it seems
tax day is coming.
Whether we like it or not. It usually doesn't make people that happy, but it's gonna be here.
We'll be happy when it's over.
Yes.
Next Thursday will be great for everyone who filed their taxes.
Assuming maybe they'll get some money back. I've heard better results this year than the last couple of years. But Emma, we're going to talk a little bit, because I'm on the show, we're going to talk a little bit about retirement.
I am so happy about that.
And one of the most common questions that we get is, do I have enough money to retire? And that answer is a loaded one. Because Emma, if I were to ask you, is how much money do I need to retire?
Is that actually the real question, though?
Maybe.
Wouldn't you say a better question would be, will my income support my lifestyle? Because I feel like maybe, you know, it could be different.
Right? It can. And it is very different for every individual. And it's really has to do with what kind of income do you expect to have coming in versus what your spending habits are. And what lifestyle you want to live post, you know, working. Do you want your retirement to be a bigger, better lifestyle? Or do you expect things to slow down where your spending isn't as high?
Yeah, I really loved you put it into perspective earlier that just because you have more money in your retirement account, just because somebody has that doesn't necessarily they're going to mean they're going to be better off for retirement in the future.
Right. Funding for, say, you know, a $10,000 a month lifestyle versus funding for a $5,000 a month lifestyle can be a very radical different number. And that's where I guess, you know, to the listeners is, I can't give you that answer without having the understanding of what the rest of your financial world looks like. And so if it's just a dollar amount, then sure, we need to track this rate of return with this amount of contributions to get to that goal. But goals change as well.
Absolutely. And just the world is changing. I mean, it's kind of hard to plan for a world that's going to be different in 10, 20 years.
Right.
So how do you start to piece that together and look at that? Like, are there different kinds of income?
Right.
Yeah.
So kind of analyzing too, which we're going to stick with Oregon just for this kind of conversation, because it can be different in other states as well, is you contribute into Social Security, whether you know or like it or not. You know, that comes out of your check, you know, before that money gets to you and it is funded. And then when you retire, Social Security is meant to replace about 40% of your income. And then the question is where does the other 60% come in? Which historically, you know, long enough time ago, if you go kind of back 80s, 90s, and people still have them today, is they have pensions as well on top of 401ks.
I hardly hear about somebody actually having a pension anymore.
Right. And reasoning for that is, one, it can be kind of expensive for the company as well. And the biggest kind of shift in it as well is people used to tend to work at places longer. You would have more of 20, 30 year work life expectancy with one company. Now you see more shifts every 4 to 5 years. So that really can kind of change the cost of the pension and things like that. And anymore, since the 401k was introduced in, I think, 1978 or something like that, it passes the employer responsibility to the employee for funding for retirement. But the real big kind of question is what is my lifestyle and how can I continue or increase this lifestyle to be better to serve the purpose? Because everybody is very different. My retirement probably looks a lot different than yours, Emma.
Yeah. Yep. So how do you start to break that down? Are there some examples that you can give us of what that might look like?
Well, yeah. I mean, if you have income replacement of, say you want to live off $5,000 a month. Let's just call it that, just kind of make math easy. And we're going to assume on the other end of that is the home is paid for and no outstanding other debt. And so hypothetically, Social Security could step in and replace, say, $2,500 a month for it.
Mm-hmm.
So you're halfway there.
Yeah.
And we just need to generate the other, you know, $25,000.
And that's coming from a retirement account.
Typically coming from, you know, a mix of pensions, legacy pensions, and or 401k, IRAs, simple plans, retirement plans, and Roth as well, which will have different tax advantages, but we can get further into that later. But it could be somebody that has less money in assets actually lives a more comfortable retirement. Some of it can be pension replacement. Some of it can be just lifestyle replacement. Because to generate, you know, if you have $2 million, you know, at a 4% distribution rate, it generates about just under $7,000 a month.
Mm-hmm.
And if you need to get the 10, then you have a shortfall. But
right.
If you only need $3,000 a month and you have $900,000, then that bucket is full.
Yeah, because that 4% is actually covering most of it. So you're
right.
Actually getting most of what you need from your own retirement account just because your spending might be lower.
And Social Security, I mean, it's, you know, in theory, it replaces about 40%. That's for the average American, I think that would be, is if you get lower income, it replaces higher because the income disparity is still there. But having access to one Social Security, which early Social Security 62, delayed Social Security 70. So these are still mid-60s actions, things you do in your mid to late 60s.
Topics of conversation.
Exactly. Well, the conversation should start earlier, and we'll kind of get back and we'll get into that. But it is very different and very individualized for every single person.
Yeah. Well, and so really quick, though, I thought one thing was interesting. You talked about early Social Security, and then at 70, you get full Social Security. Can you explain that? Because that was actually interesting.
Okay. Depending on when you were born, because they've changed when full Social Security is. So as of now, it is 67. So my Social Security retirement age and your Social Security retirement age is full retirement age is 67. You can take Social Security at a reduced amount as early as 62. And there may be some other extenuating circumstances, but we're going to go generalized. And then also you can delay, and each year you kind of get an 8% bump by delaying. So if your kind of work life is happy and you have the flexibility to still work, then it's sometimes beneficial to just delay because you get the maximum benefit later on in life.
So it kind of locks you into wherever you start taking Social Security at.
Yes, and sort of. There could be some, if you have a high enough income pre-67, they can withhold some of your Social Security income based on if your earnings limit's too high. And so then when you hit full retirement age, it recalculates based on how much they withheld. So you may have actually started at 62 and they withheld enough that then when you hit 67, they re-rate it at 63 if they withheld enough.
Okay.
Once you hit full retirement age, that the income doesn't matter. Other than for tax purposes, but that's a whole different conversation. But, and you can see it all over the board. People retire with $15,000 a month. People retire with $3,000 a month. And it very much depends on lifestyle. I would say that one of the biggest, I guess you can call it mistakes that we see is way too much debt in retirement.
And like going into retirement with too much debt?
Yeah, with too much unsecured debt. Mortgage isn't, you know, it can and cannot be depending on the different income streams. But having unsecured credit card debt that isn't monthly covered completely, not just minimum payments, because minimum payments can be a 20-year payoff depending on the credit card. And that can just kind of drag, you know, into the abyss, I guess you could call that. But... and it can get more expensive. It's tied to, you know, the federal funds rate. So, you know, what interest rates you were paying on credit cards 3 years ago is different than it is today because interest rates have increased.
Yeah, yep.
And so the debt has gotten more expensive. Stuff that was probably costing 21% is probably now closer to 28 to 30. And that's a big... that's a big change.
Yeah.
And it can get really expensive really quick. The easiest success stories that we see is zero debt in retirement.
Well, so you said that I'd love to dig into. You said that mortgages aren't necessarily the same, that they don't necessarily work the same. So is that a goal that people should have, is to pay off their mortgages before retirement? Or... I mean, I know it's case by case, but...
yeah, and you can look at it as for simplicity reasons. Yeah, it's great. If you have the funds available to get rid of it, it can make things less stressful just because your income stream, the budget is expanded instead of, you know, declining of room, of extra income. But sometimes, especially now when rates, you know, you could get mortgage rates under 3%. And... on our side of the table, if you can get 6, 7, 8% returns in the market, you're better off.
Yeah, your money is better situated,
right,
gaining more than you, what you would lose in the interest.
I always enjoyed the philosophy of having the cash on hand to pay it off if crap hits the fan. I think that's radio accessible.
That's fair.
But and it's just very individualized for every person. But we're already running into our first break, which that seemed like that went way too fast. So that means I was talking too much. And we're going to come back and talk about some of the biggest mistakes in retirement planning. So we will be right back here in a few minutes. You're listening to True Wealth on 93.9 FM, 1240 KQEN. We'll be back after the break.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
Welcome back, everyone. We're back on the True Wealth Radio Show. This is Justin Bruggeman, and I'm here in studio with
Emma Arndt.
Emma, we were talking about, you know, the big question is, do I have enough money to retire?
Yep.
Which, and we're going to kind of pivot a little bit to some of the biggest planning mistakes, which I get to take a lot of these really personal because I do a lot of the planning in the office. you know, with all three of us do, but I tend to obsess a little bit more over it. So, and Emma, we kind of had this kind of conversation earlier of, you know, do I have enough money to retire? Mm-hmm. And you kind of brought up as, or I guess we kind of brought up as like, when do I start planning?
Yeah.
When does that discussion need to start? And I kind of brushed over the kind of that comment of just, you know, kind of in the early age, it's kind of getting on a budget, get in the habit of saving, you know, the kind of, which again, I will reiterate this on the air. I am not giving financial advice. This is very personal to every individual. This is very broad statements. Just so we're kind of covering our own butt about the advice portion of it, but it is different for every person. But in the early years, planning for retirement, it really is just figuring out a budget that really makes sense. I mean, if you can save between 10 and 15% for retirement, that is great.
Yeah, that's a bit.
And I also understand economically, especially with how expensive things have gotten over the last few years, that some of that has been shifted or just has to be shifted to survive. But there is still time. It's more about creating the habit, even if it's starting small, especially as a percentage wise, say 5% in each year or each raise, you bump it 1% and you don't actually really notice it that much.
That's actually a really good idea. So what is the like ideal planning time? Like, yes, you can be contributing to your retirement accounts and stuff like that, but when is the best time to really buckle in and start planning for your retirement?
Right. So at a younger age, you know, just getting into the workforce, I would say, you know, every 5 years, kind of check in and make sure you're doing everything is kind of in order for, you know, what age you are, income, wherever stage you're at in life. But realistically, once you hit about, well, I guess it would depend on what age you want to retire. Because if you want to retire at 50, then the conversation needs to happen much earlier.
Mm-hmm.
But again, we'll go back to kind of broad strokes here. We'll say 65 just for fun because 67 scares people. So we'll just call 65.
65. Sounds good.
So it would kind of be more of late 40s would probably be is where you kind of really want to make sure you're on track because that gives you enough time to play catch up if needed.
Mm-hmm.
It's easier, you know, if you have a longer time frame. So of course, if you're planning at 20, it's easier. Put a lot more in, let it grow and let the compound interest work for you. But that isn't always the case. So typically about 10 to 15 years prior is where you want the initial kind of, am I in the right track? And do I need to make any major course corrections? It's typically pretty safe. And then the last 5 years before retirement.
Yeah, absolutely. Are there, so you talked about like catch-up contributions.
Mm-hmm.
Are there specific rules around that?
Yes. If you are over 50, typically you have catch-up provisions, meaning you can put more money into IRAs, 401ks, most tax deferred vehicles. They allow you to play catch up because it's not uncommon for the need to have the catch up.
Yeah.
And so it's an extra avenue to be able to jam some more money in to play that catch up line. And go ahead.
Oh, so the next question with that, though, is so everything in tax-deferred accounts,
mm-hmm.
is that, that's another one that's on the list of the biggest mistakes, right? Why is that, though? Why is it not a great idea to have everything in tax-deferred accounts?
It really would depend on individual circumstances. If your lifestyle isn't super expensive in retirement, the tax-deferred assets, if you're using those as distributions, mm-hmm. can sometimes be okay. Where you run into some is if you have way too much money in tax-deferred assets, and say, you know, say you live on $5,000 a month and you have $6 million in a 401k,
mm-hmm.
these, every single distribution you take, if it is a traditional 401k, is taxable income. And then when you hit age 73, there's this wonderful thing that's called required minimum distributions, where the IRS says, you have hid this money from me long enough. Hide's probably a bad word. Deferred this money long enough.
It's time to pay the taxes.
It's time to start paying the taxes. And what can sometimes happen is the amount of distributions that are required to take can jump you tax brackets.
Okay.
As well as Medicare premiums if you jump too high. So even though your life didn't get that expensive, it's going to force your life that expensive.
That makes sense.
And so it can change based on, you know, that's why you get a lot of push for Roth assets as well, because they don't have RMDs tied to them. And then also, if you're wanting to retire early, having cash in after-tax assets or cash on the sidelines is very helpful. Because
why is that?
You are not theoretically supposed to access retirement funds until 59 and a half. There's different caveats to that at 55 and retired, but again, we're going general.
Mm-hmm.
So say you retire at 50 and you have all your money tied up, say, in an IRA.
Mm-hmm.
How do you access that prior to at 51? You can't. Well, you can, I guess would be the answer is, but you have to pay ordinary income tax plus a 10% penalty.
Yeah. So it's you technically can, but it's a pain.
Ill-advised sometimes. Just depending on circumstances. And that's, you know, the IRMA tax breaks, we talked about that. And the other one is healthcare costs, which is not something I typically like to talk about on the radio because it's a hard thing to project out.
Right. But why does that become a problem later?
Because if in-home care, or if you're no longer able to live on your own, that can really eat through assets really quick.
Yeah.
That would be the big one, is you need somebody else to take care of you. Or not planning for survivorship benefits.
Explain that one to me. I don't.
Because if, so let's, I can go even theoretically. Me and my wife, I'll have a Social Security income, she'll have a Social Security income, then we have retirement assets. But if something happens to me, she can collect either her Social Security or my survivorship Social Security, whichever's higher for her.
Oh, but only one of them.
But only one of them.
Okay.
So if you have a $2,000 Social Security income for both mm-hmm. spouses, and then one is no longer with us anymore, it can really shift the plan where you come up with the extra money. Usually expenses go down and things like that. But to be able to maintain the lifestyle, you would need to have the extra assets, or assuming a higher distribution rate when that time comes if you don't have life insurance in place.
Okay. Huh.
And another, which I'm going to see if we have enough time to get through a little bit of this before we have to go on our next break, but the other is, you know, let's say we, as me and my wife make $100,000. Let's just call it that. That's not actual factual. But in retirement, my brain would be like, I need $100,000. Right?
Uh-huh.
But when you're getting a W-2 income, you're also making retirement plan contributions. You're paying Social Security taxes, Medicare taxes, Oregon paid leave taxes, all those fun taxes that some of them go away in retirement.
Okay. So it's really like the take-home day-to-day living pay.
Correct. And that's really what you would want to be planning. And there's different things too. Like Social Security in the state of Oregon is not taxable as income. That's an additional savings of, so what typically is, you have your gross kind of income that you've paid now. Mm-hmm. It's typically between 70 and 80% is what people need to maintain the same lifestyle.
Okay.
If you think is you don't have the commuter gas.
Right. Yep.
The work clothes, the extra taxes, lunches, which doesn't mean you don't eat lunch at home, but there can be cheaper ways to do it if you don't typically go home.
Yep.
And so the real kind of cost, again, is individualized for everybody, but the real cost of it may be less from a distribution side with when you tack on Social Security and everything else based on what's typically coming out of like a paycheck.
Okay, I could see that. So really retirement planning is a bundle of different things
Yes.
that you're looking at. So that would be like the tax planning for it.
Mm-hmm.
Healthcare planning and your income planning, like how much income you need to live off of. And it's kind of a combination of all of that that makes a retirement
yes.
plan.
Yes, and even some legacy planning too. Sometimes it's important to leave a legacy behind, assets to beneficiaries, so that can change that. But we are running long, and so we're going to go to our next break. And we get back, we're going to talk about the biggest fears of retirement. This is Justin Bruggeman and
Emma Arndt.
You're listening to True Wealth on 93.9 FM, 1240 KQA.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
Welcome back to the True Wealth Radio Show. This is Justin Bruggeman. I'm in the studio with
Emma Arndt.
Emma, before we went on the break, we kind of put a little blimp out there. What is the biggest fears that people have in retirement?
Running out of money.
That
and having to go back to work and unretire yourself.
Yes, that is definitely the biggest one. Longevity is a real big one. Sometimes in retirement, your money and your funds need to last 25, 30 years.
Yep.
Which kind of comes into the next point of which typically what they would say is between 4% and 5% distribution rate annually with the retirement assets, assuming a risk tolerance. Again, this is not advice, this is just general. You can get 6% or so in the market as a moderately conservative, we'll call it that. Then you should just never run out of money, because you're really only spending on the interest of it.
That sounds ideal.
It does sound ideal. But what happens when we go through a five-year cycle like we've gone through the five-year cycle we have currently with just how much things cost?
I mean, inflation is, it's getting up there.
So especially if you're basing your retirement expenses in today's dollars, it's not accounting for the inflation later on in life.
Right.
Which Social Security has some inflation adjustments and things like that. So that can kind of help that in a way. And also the just market volatility and market timing of distributions can have an adverse effect as well.
What do you mean by that?
Meaning if, say, you're living on, let's call it 5% just to make the math easy, you're taking 5% distribution rates from retirement.
Mm-hmm.
And when the month after you take your first distribution, you have a 20, or so let's go a year. A year after you take your first distributions, you get a 20% correction in the market. So you've taken 5% out and the market's gone down 20%. So you are now have 25% less money in retirement than you originally had planned.
Yep, that would hurt.
And not saying that even that is disastrous. It just means hopefully that the portfolio is constructed to where it can shield some of that and you can pull from some assets mm-hmm. that maybe aren't directly tied to the market. Or you have some cash reserves on the sideline, because even in retirement, you should still have a healthy emergency fund.
Mm-hmm.
3 to 6 months expenses at minimum, probably.
That's good to know. That's like available in mm-hmm. cash that you have.
Unless there's a lot, I mean, unless you have a lot of guaranteed income. I mean, if you have a lot of the Social Security, a lot of pensions income, that can kind of change that, because those are supposed to last your entire life.
Mm-hmm.
But especially if, you know, 50% of it is dependent on retirement assets, having that cushion to buy time for the market to fluctuate can really change the success of a retirement plan. And that way you don't feel like you're playing catch up in retirement without the income, because that's always kind of a scary thought. So it can really change, you know, the mental aspect of it too, because typically people have a really hard time when they retire, and it usually lasts about 18 months where they don't like to spend any of the money they've
yeah.
saved.
Yep.
And that's just from creating a habit for such a long time. You have this nest egg, you have this nest egg, and then when you have to start tapping into it, it makes people really nervous.
Yeah, because instead of adding to it, you're taking from it, and it's going against everything that you've been doing for 20, 30, 40 years.
And yeah, the mental aspect of it is honestly sometimes kind of hilarious, because you see the stress start, and then typically, from my experience, it's about 18 months, and then you start kind of seeing it all kind of come together, and you get better moods, happier in retirement, because I could see how it could be stressful going to work every day, then just all of a sudden you're just not.
Yeah.
It would drive probably me crazy. It would drive my wife really crazy if I was there bothering her all the time. But which I completely just lost where I was going with that.
Well, and that makes sense to me too. Like, 18 months to like rediscover your passions,
right,
and to find new hobbies that you like, mm-hmm, or to, like, you know, I think maybe sometimes people have an idea of like, oh, I really want to go travel, and then they go travel and they're like, actually that was a better idea in my head than it was,
right,
to go do. So
and most commonly in retirement as well, which again we're going generic, say let's call it 65, you have about 15 years in retirement where you have the energy, the resources, mm-hmm, and the time. Typically, once you hit kind of mid-80s, you slow down.
Yeah.
So the expenses aren't typically as high. You don't leave the house as much. You're not traveling as much, which, you know, that's a very broad statement. It's very individualized for every person, but the vast majority, people start slowing down, which can kind of turn into the topic of kind of the when do you take Social Security versus not. Again, very, mm-hmm, generalized kind of thought process, but if longevity is in your family, that may sway when you may decide. Yeah. A lot of health and stuff has changed a lot since then. So, but longevity in your family does matter. Mm-hmm. And that can also change if you have your parents in their late 90s and living, you need to plan for that as well, if that may be a possibility.
Oh, like you're at retirement age, but your parents are still alive and mm-hmm. that might be a consideration is too.
Their longevity, just in how long they're going to live. Because statistically, if you have both parents that live late into their late 90s, your statistics of doing that are higher as well.
Oh, yep. Yeah, that's good forward thinking.
But, and there's a lot more with Social Security and timing on when spousal benefits, survivorship benefits, when you take. It is a very individualized conversation, so please don't take this as take it at 62 if you don't have longevity in your house. That's not what I'm saying. It needs to be a very individualized decision, and there's pros and cons to all of it.
Yeah. So what they should do is talk to a professional financial planner.
Yes. And mm-hmm. if you have a guy, that's who you talk to. And if you don't have a guy, you can always give us a call. Emma, how mm-hmm. do they contact us?
541-375-0898.
And you can shoot us an email at info@littlejohnfs.com as well.
Yep. And on our website as well, there's also a spot where you can schedule an introductory interview with us to see if we mm-hmm. are a good fit for you.
And the big kind of takeaway kind of from the big fear, I guess, in this segment would be is the retirement plan should be focused on reliable income, not just investment growth.
Okay.
Because you can go through times of stagnant returns or not favorable returns in your mark, which, you know, it can kind of depend on portfolio construction too. I mean, the perfect world, you would have some passive income from some maybe rentals, some pension income, some Social Security income, and then some investment income, which that's perfect world. Not all of us live in perfect world.
Yeah. So here's a question with that. So are you allowed to work and still be in retirement, or is it just passive income, or is there like a line though that yes, you can work, but not over a certain amount? Or
there's typically, that I'm aware of, no real limit on how long you can work. There is no point in delaying Social Security past 70. So if you are past 70, if you have not filed for Social Security, I would highly talk to somebody, because you should probably do that.
Good.
Without being completely direct, but have that conversation if you have not started that and you are over 70. And you can typically, even past age 70, still make contributions to even 401ks. You may still then have to still satisfy required minimum distributions at some point, but you can still be an active employee past retirement. You know, you can work forever. The IRS doesn't care. They like to tax. They'll tax you forever.
And that never stops. Like, that required distribution. You don't get some magical pass when you hit 100 or something that you don't have to pay that anymore. Or,
you know, Emma, that is great. And we will cover that when we get back from our last profit break.
Sounds good to me.
You are listening to True Wealth on 93.9 FM, 1240 KQEN. This is Justin Bruggeman.
This is Emma Arndt.
This This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
Hey, gang. Welcome to the last leg of the True Wealth Radio Show. This is Justin Bruggeman in studio with
Emma Arndt.
Emma, you had a question right before the break. And what was it one more time? You don't remember. It was RMDs.
Oh, yeah. If there is an age where you kind of age out of required distribution.
Okay. Which, and I use the RMD phrase loosely. It is required minimum distributions. They used to start at 70 and a half. Then they jumped to 72. Now it's 73. And I think over, I can't remember how many years, I think it might jump to 75, but don't quote me on that. But it is the IRS saying, you know, you deferred this money enough, we're going to start forcing you to take distributions. And it, which we're just going to use 73 just for math purposes easier. It starts out at about 3.7% of the account value.
Okay.
And it's all based on an actual lifetime income table, if I can talk. You know, broad strokes here at 73, 4%, 75, 4.1%, up until 95, about 11%. You hit 100, it's about 15% of the account value.
Okay.
Which it's just a way to, it force dwindles the account down. And the value is calculated on December 31st of the prior year.
Okay.
Even though each year the percentage or lifetime factor they use can go up, if you have a down year of the market, the next year your RMD can actually be less.
Okay.
Because it's all based on December 31st values. One day to pick it.
And so let me make sure I'm understanding that right. So when you say that they make you take out 4%, they make you take out that 4% and they tax you on it, but you get to keep the post-tax amount.
Correct.
Okay.
I mean, you can get clever and do things like if you don't need the money, you can do qualified charitable distributions and some other things like that. Again, there's different options.
Do they still do it if you're pulling money out of it to live on? Or does what you're pulling out month to month to live on, does that count towards that amount?
As long as it satisfies that factor amount, you're in the clear. And if you don't take it, the penalty is like 50% or something like that. It's something crazy.
Whoa,
so, you don't want to forget.
Did you say 50?
Like 50. It's like they take half the account?
Wow.
I don't remember the exact number, but I know it's ridiculously high. And so each year that percentage or factor increases. So by the time you're in your 90s, it's roughly 11, 12, 100, 15%. Like those are estimated numbers, not exact numbers. And so you're required to take that money out. To answer your question is no, it doesn't end. It's just a factor. I mean, I don't know what the table is if you live till 120. I haven't looked that far. I've never ran into the issue, so I haven't looked. But I'm sure we could find out.
I'd be curious on that because I, just a personal opinion, I feel like once you get to a certain age, they should maybe cut you a break.
Yeah, I you would think.
You would think, but hey. I don't make the rules.
In case you haven't noticed, I don't think the IRS gives too many breaks in any part of it.
Yeah.
You know, that is one of the large benefits of Roth IRAs is there is no RMDs, no required minimum distributions.
Because you already paid the taxes on it.
And it's a tax-free distribution, so the IRS just doesn't bother. So it would be mainly be for IRAs, 401ks, 403bs, SEP plans, simple plans, pretty much anything that you haven't paid taxes on yet means you're probably going to get the taxes on the other end, and the RMDs will start forcing those distributions.
And so that kind of just speaks to why it's probably a good idea to have a mix of things.
Yep.
And really like diversify where it's going.
Because then you can play the tax distribution game of taking some from different pots of money to stay within a favorable tax bracket. Not going to get far into that, but you know, in beginning retirement years when income drops, you can do some could potentially do some Roth conversions or something like that. Again, see me after class if that's a thought. But we are kind of coming to the end of here. So a little bit to reiterate kind of what we talked about. You can catch us on the podcast. How do they find the podcast, Emma?
On our website, under podcasts.
Well, perfect. We kind of dove through with, you know, what kind of questions people ask about retirement, the planning mistakes, the biggest fears. If it's a concern, and it maybe should be a concern, please reach out and talk to somebody, at least get the questions answered, because nothing is more common than I should have done this 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. So if it's in the front part of your brain right now, maybe get something scheduled. But outside of that, we're going to let everybody enjoy the rest of their Tuesday. You are listening to the True Wealth Radio Show on 93.9 FM, 1240 KQEN. I am Justin Bruggeman, and in studio with
Emma Arndt.
And we'll catch you guys next week. Thanks.